I'd like to share with you a little bit some topics on Shalom Bayis. So when Shushi began discussing this event for me already a number of months ago and asked me to speak a little bit about the topic of Shalom, and I just want to mention how appropriate it is to have this shir in this home. I was looking on the Ehrenfeld's bookcase and there's a beautiful hammer that says, "Trying not to kill each other since 2004. Which, you know, so I thought, man, it's like...
13 years.
That's 13 years, and they're both here, Baruch Hashem. So, you know, it's an important topic, Shalom Bayis, and the truth is I'm not going to take too much of your time. And Shalom Bayis, whenever I've spoken about Shalom Bayis a couple of times throughout the years, and I often find it one of the most difficult topics to really present, because the truth is it's such a vast topic. And the amazing part is the following. You know, Hilchos Kashrus, laws of Kashrus, dietary laws, are the same for all of us. All right, people may have different nuances in terms of Hechsherim, but we all have the same halachos of Basar, B'chalov, of Shchita, we all have the same halachos. And the truth is, that's true in many Hilchos Shabbos. There's one, 39 halachos, we all have the same halachos, there's no real difference. Shalom Bayis is unique, because Shalom Bayis is about relationships. And no two relationships are the same. Very simply because no two people are the same. So I often find it difficult to give a shir on Shalom Bayis to obviously a diverse group. And I say a diverse group because even if we all look the same or daven the same or live in the same area, we're all diverse. Because, you know, externally people could look similar, but internally in our homes we all have dramatically different lives, dramatically different marriages. So what I'd like to try to do with you tonight is just kind of share a couple of Yesodistic kind of fundamental ideals that hopefully we'll all be able to take with us and emir teshem build better marriages. So there's an amazing pasuk. Pasuk that's quoted, Avram Avinu is reticent to send away his firstborn son, Yishmael. Remember, Avram Avinu is the king of Kiruv. He's the one who brings everyone closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when Sarah tells him to send away Yishmael, he's heartbroken. How could it be? It's my job to make the world and I'm supposed to send away my one and only son from Hagar. How could I do it? So the Ribbono Shel Olam comes along and says, "Kol asher tomar elecha Sarah, shma bekola. Whatever Sarah Imenu tells you, listen to her." So this is one of the most favorite psukim, often quoted by Jewish women throughout the ages, right? Avraham Avinu says, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Avraham Avinu, whatever Sarah Imenu tells you, listen to her. And Rashi HaKadosh has an amazing statement. Rashi says, Melamed Shayatafel l'Sarah b'Nevius. It teaches us that Avraham Avinu was not as great as Sarah in prophecy. Literally, Sarah Imenu was a greater prophetess than Avram. So the Netziv Rav Nathalitzi Yehuda Berlin asked an obvious question. Says, how could Rashi say that Sarah was a greater prophetess than Avram? We don't find one time that God ever speaks to Sarah. And yet we find multiple times that God speaks to Avram. So how can you say that Sarah Imenu was greater than Avram in prophecy? So the Netziv creates an amazing paradigm. He says that there are two different types of communication with God. This is what's called Nevius, or we call prophecy, and Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh, I guess we'd call intuition. And says in Netziv, what Rashi means to say is the following. Avram, you want to keep Yishmael in the home. Sarah Imenu was telling you, I run the home. You have to trust me. I understand that what I'm telling you is difficult, but you need to understand that I have the pulse of the family. I have the pulse of the home. You need to punt on this one. You need to let me make this decision. Says the Netziv, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, Avraham Avinu. You might be a greater prophet, but she knows the family better than you do. And I think this gives us lesson number one for life. That's one of the most important things in marriage is to recognize that each spouse has their strengths. And the truth is, you know what the best kind of marriage is? When you don't have the same strengths. Because if you have the same strengths, then ultimately you're duplicating efforts. But if a husband has one set of strengths, a wife has another set of strengths, then they complement each other so beautifully. You know, my wife and I, when we speak to young Chasanim and Kalos, I can now say young Chasanim and Kalos, I feel a little bit older now. But, you know, people often think that they're looking for someone like them. I want someone like me. You don't want someone like you. I mean, I'm not saying it's anyone specific. You don't want someone like you, right? You want someone who's going to complement you. Because if you have someone like you and you have the same skill set, you have the same strength, then you also have the same deficiencies. Lesson number one for this evening is to try to find the strength in your significant others. Imagine how instructive it would be when you go home in a few minutes, Emir Tzashem, and you sit down and you think to yourself, let me name the top three kohos of my spouse. What are the top three qualities my spouse possesses? And after identify, and like real things, not like they take out the garbage when they're supposed to, right? Like real, that's important, that's good, but I mean like real personality kohos. The person is ambitious. The person is optimistic. The person is filled with simchas hachaim, a constant joy of life. Whatever it is, but think about those qualities. What makes my spouse unique? Then my job is to try to figure out, number one, how to go ahead and appreciate those strengths and ultimately, again, respect those strengths and figure out a way how to help my significant other cultivate those strengths. Because let's be honest, very often, if somebody were to ask us, and we're amongst friends, so we'll talk openly, you know, if somebody were to ask us, name me the top three flaws in your spouse. Now, don't call out anything, right? But name me the top three flaws in your spouse. I would venture to say most of us would be able to rattle that off relatively quickly. On the other hand, if someone were to say, name me the top three strengths of your spouse, I've done this in groups before, it often takes a little bit more time. People pause, people think, because that's the derech of people. The derech of people is we are drawn to inconsistencies, faults, and shortcomings. It takes a lot more effort to find the good. We learn from Avram and Sarah, they were different people with different skill sets. And it took, here's the amazing part, it took the Ribono Shel Olam to remind Avram Avinu, Avram, you need to listen to her because she has a skill set that's different than yours. You're out saving the world. She's out saving the family. Her work is more important than yours, and she knows better about what's happening in a tent, about what's happening in the home, than you do. You need to respect her strengths. You need to appreciate her strengths, and you need to defer to her strengths. That's lesson number one. Learn to appreciate, respect, and ultimately bolster the respect, the strengths of the other. Lesson number two comes from an amazing Gemara above Metzia. The Gemara says this, but we did this in Daf Yomi not so long ago. Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph 59a. Listen to this one phrase in the Gemara. Isisa gutza gachin velachishla. If your wife is short, bend down and whisper to her. If your wife is short, bend down and whisper to her. So what does this mean? So the Maharal of Prague and others explain so beautifully to what the Gemara is teaching us is that the goal of marriage is not to make someone in your image. Sometimes you see people say, you know what, I believe in you. They tell this, I believe in you. But you know what, I believe in you. You know what the translation of that is? I believe you could become the person I believe you really need to be. And you're not there, but I know exactly how you're going to get there. The worst thing you could ever try to do in a marriage is try to remake your spouse in your image. Hopefully you married the person who you married because you saw something significant, you saw something beautiful. But in marriage, we have to learn to meet our significant other where they are. You see what the Gemara is saying is, if my wife is short, so I can say, okay, if you want to speak with me, get on the chair. Right? I'm over here, I'm not bending down. You get on the chair, you stand up and we'll talk. No, says the Gemara, if your wife is short, and of course, short is just the metaphor for two people just being in different places in life. I have to meet my wife where she is, and she has to try to meet me where I am. We often try to bring our spouse to where we want them to be in the model we have created with them, when we have to take the time to try to understand who are they, what are they, going back to number one, what makes them special, and how can I meet them where they are. It's lesson number two. Learn to meet people, learn to see people, learn to appreciate people, not for who you think you can make them into, but ultimately for who they are. Lesson number three. Let's look at that chumash just right behind you. So, it always intrigued me that in Parshas Vayetze, where the Torah goes into incredible detail about the meeting between Yaakov and Rachel. So the Torah discusses, you know, Yaakov Avinu comes into Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nahor. He's ready to find, Rachel is ready to find love in his wife. And what happens? He sees her. And of course, the Torah says the following. He sees Rachel. And what happens? Yaakov Avinu, we know the story, rolls the, as my daughter would say, the hugeongous stone off the top of the well, right? An incredible display of physical prowess. And there are so many intense displays of emotion, love, and strength in here. The Torah says, what happens? Yaakov Avinu sees Rachel. What's the first thing he does? Good morning, everyone. We're here at the Shalom Bayis Yom. It's like Daf Yomi in the morning. All right, so remember, the first thing he does is he kisses her. Kisses her. And the truth is, you know, the best part is when our kids learn this, right? It was an air kiss. You know, he blew her a kiss. You know, he kissed her. Yaakov kissed Rachel. Right? He found out who she was. He kissed her. Why? Because he fell in love with her. And in fact, the Torah explicitly says that he works for her for 7 years. The days go by. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu was in love. He heard the birds chirping. The sun was shining. Everything was beautiful in the world of Yaakov Avinu for one simple reason. Because he was in love. You ever wonder to yourself, why does the Torah give us such detail? Right? Why does that tell me that he rolled off the stone and he kissed her and the days flew by? Torah is teaching us a very important idea, which is that in order to have a successful and meaningful marriage, bless you, there has to be passion. A relationship without passion becomes a lifeless shell, becomes simply a utilitarian relationship of two people who perhaps are better off because they have a joint income instead of one, or because it would be too difficult to raise kids by myself. And it becomes utilitarian relationship where, sure, we help each other out, but there's no fire, there's no passion, there's no excitement. The Torah tells us about the meeting of Yaakov and Rachel, and about the marriage of Yaakov and Rachel, because the Torah is teaching us the need to infuse constant passion into our marriage. How do we infuse passion into our marriage? So I'll make a couple of suggestions. Number one, you know, fast forwarding a little bit towards the end of Chumash Bereishis, Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed. And remember, again, he tells Yosef to go ahead and bury him in Ma'asa Machpelah. And then he says, you know, I know I didn't bury your mother in Ma'asa Machpelah. I buried her on the side of the road. But even though I didn't bury Ma'asa Machpelah, I'm still asking you to take me to Hebron and bury me in Ma'asa Machpelah. So Rav Sham Shnofal Hirsch asks, why did Yaakov Avinu bury Rachel Imenu by the side of the road? He buried Rachel Imenu by the side of the road. The Gemara tells us why. Because that was the road that Klal Yisrael will take when we go to Golos. So Mama Rachel Imenu comes out and davens for us as we're being led out to the diaspora. So Rav Hirsch says something amazing. Rav Hirsch says that Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, you need to understand. I know you might think that because I didn't bury your mother in Ma'asa Machpelah, that you think I loved her less, or that I forgot about her. And Yaakov, listen to these words. Yaakov Avinu says to his son on his deathbed, his final words, there's not one day that went by in my life that I didn't think about your mother. There's not one day where she wasn't in my thoughts, both when she was alive and when she left this world. I want you to understand, I was always preoccupied with the thought of your mother. I always had her image in my mind. I always had her image in my heart. And my love for her just continued to feel amplified each and every day, even when she was no longer here. Passion is often engendered through mindfulness. See, we all have busy days. We all have busy days. But it's important, even over the course of a busy day, to take the time to go ahead and reach out to your significant other. My feeling is, if the President of the United States has time to tweet, so we have time to reach out to our significant others, to take the time to lift up the phone or to send a text message. But I want to give a very important caveat here. If you're going to send a text message, it has to be full big boy and big girl sentences. In other words, I love you cannot be I heart or I L-U-V you. If your spouse is important enough to you, then you'll take the time to actually take the 15 seconds and write out the word love and write out the word you. Passion is off, and we know that, because the truth is, when we've had those opportunities, when you're in the middle of the day and you get that message, you know, sometimes that call comes in and you can't take it. I take your calls. I just want you to know that. But sometimes when that call comes in, and you can't take it, and it's followed up by a text, trying to reach you, just want to tell you that I love you. that's like you won the emotional lottery. Like you feel like $1 million. And you take a step back and you realize, you know what? There's someone in this world who loves me. And there's someone in this world who cares about me and is thinking about me, even when I'm not with them. And there's someone who, no matter how busy they are in their own day, has time to think about me. If you've, hopefully you've all received texts or messages or phone calls like that. And hopefully you've given, or you've also made those messages, made those calls as well. Mindfulness creates passion. When a husband and wife know that the other is thinking about them the whole day, okay, I can't be on the phone all day, I can't speak 55 times a day, I can't go ahead and message and this and that. People have day jobs, we know, right? It's Sheva Brachas is over. But at the end of the day, that little message creates that recognition, I'm thinking about you. And that little token of, I'm thinking about you and I love you, that creates passion. Number two, and I want to talk a little bit more in this passion area about something a bit more sensitive. There's an amazing, this is where everybody perks up, of course. Right, so there's an amazing Gemara Maseches Tainis. The Gemara talks about Abba Chilkia. Abba Chilkia was a grandson of Choni HaMa'agil. Choni HaMa'agil, you know, the Gemara tells us, was the story of the man who drew the circle, incredible power of prayer. So he had a grandson, Abba Chilkia. So to make a very long story short, Abba Chilkia, one time, the rabbis were dispatched him to pray for rain, and he was very humble. He wouldn't pray for rain in their presence. So he follows them. They follow him back home. They follow him back home. And they saw, listen to what the Gemara says, Kimata Lamasa. When Abba Chilkia came out from the fields and ultimately came into his city, Nafka Divisu, his wife came out to greet him, Kimekashta, and she was all dressed up. Wife came out to greet him, and she was all dressed up. So the rabbi saw this and felt like Abba Chilkia has come back in his work clothes. And his wife is all dressed up, all beautifully. And again, they saw the disparity, what's going on over here. So at first the rabbis didn't want to ask Abba Chilkia. They thought, you know what, it's not Sanua to ask what exactly is going on over here. But then they felt compelled to ask. They felt compelled to ask. And what does he say? Kidei shelo etein einai b'isha acheres. He says, my wife always makes herself look beautiful so that I should not be tempted by another woman. Always makes herself look beautiful so that I should only desire her and no one else. And now I just want to point out, you know, if I would say this, as well as, okay, it's a bit prust. It's Abba Chilkia. It's Abba Chilkia. And what is it telling us? And this is a very important yesod. Intimacy, physical intimacy, sexuality is exceptionally important in a marriage. And we know that meaningful intimacy is not simply the act of relations. A person could have an act of relations and gratify a desire, but doesn't engender any greater level of emotional connectedness. Physical intimacy is exceptionally important for happiness in a marriage and for longevity of a marriage. That is the one of the unique bonds that only a husband and wife share with one another. And if that becomes meaningless, or if that becomes passionless, then a couple begins to experience a breakdown in their marriage. And it's hard. It's hard because the truth is, when you have kids, and you have responsibilities, and you're pulled in multiple different directions, people are tired at the end of the day. People have a million different things going on. But it's important that a couple pays attention to their intimate life. It's important, and I apologize. I'm going to say this, and if it offends anyone, I don't mean it to offend anyone. It's important that a woman not only be put together when she leaves her house for other people. I mean, getting dressed up is not just for shul, for simchas, and for other things. The most important person for a woman to be dressed up for and to look beautiful for is not for other men, it's not for other people. It's for the man she builds her life with. It's for her husband. And when a woman goes out of her way to look beautiful for her husband, the message she's sending to him, not only that I desire you, but that you're important enough for me after a long day to put myself together and to look beautiful for you. And it's not just for women, it's true for men also, right? If a man's been watching Sports Center for the last 2 hours and he's got salsa all over his t-shirt and his shorts and he tries to create a romantic evening, your wife should get a restraining order against you for that. It's disgusting. Hey, meaning a man has to put effort into it also. A man is, again, it's different for men and it's different for women. But intimacy is only as fulfilling as the preparation that one creates for it. It's only if we place the emphasis on looking beautiful, on looking handsome, on being there in a physical and intimate way for the other, that ultimately we have passionate marriages. So lesson number three is to keep the passion alive. And the way we keep the passion alive, ultimately, again, is through the mindfulness and also being attentive to the nature and the state of our physical relationship. Two more quick things, and then I will end. Lesson number four. So if lesson number three is keeping the passion alive, lesson number four is keeping the Kedusha alive. There has to be holiness within a marriage. Now, that does not mean that husband and wife have to be chavrusos. And it does not mean that a husband walks in, honey, you got to hear this vart that I heard. It's so good. It's incredible. Let's talk Torah. Let me go over that. That's not what it means, because most of us have pretty manic lives and hectic lives. But there has to be kedusha in a home. A husband has to learn. A wife has to find her avenues of spiritual development. For some women, it's learning. For some women, it's tefillah. For some women, it's chesed, whatever it is. But both parties in a marriage have to actively be involved in the pursuit of Kiddusha. Remember, we're not just talking over here about building a successful marriage. We're talking over about building a successful Jewish marriage. And anything that is Jewish, if it's going to endure and it's going to sustain, must have a strong foundation of Kiddusha. Excuse me, but if a man doesn't have regularly set times to learn every single day, it doesn't have to be for an hour. It could be for 15 minutes. It could be for whatever you have. There's something deficient in your home. And if a woman doesn't find her way to bring ruchnis to the home, and doing homework with your kids is not enough. That's important also. It's not just the father's responsibility also. But there has to be, every couple, every spouse has to bring something ruchni to the marriage. If that's not there, you could have all the other most wonderful ingredients, but then the foundation itself is rickety. Lesson number four. Because we have to keep Kiddusha in our marriage. And finally, and this, with this I'll conclude, is the following. Going back to the first marriage of Adam and Chava. So you know, we know how that story ends, and it doesn't end well. The Shbaruch Hu says, Na'asa Adam, will make Adam, and then he says, Lo tofa yosa Adam levado, e'esa lo ezer kinekdo. I'm going to make for Adam a helpmate, because Shbaruch Hu creates Chava. We know the story. Shbaruch Hu tells them not to eat from the tree. They eat from the tree. The Ribono Shel Olam confronts them, and ultimately, again, they're held accountable for the sin. So we often assume that the chait of Adam, the sin of Adam, was that he ate from the tree. We assume that was his sin. But in reality, again, the Sfarim bring down that wasn't his sin. The fact that we make mistakes, the fact that we go against the word of God, that's almost to be expected. The mistake of Adam is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu confronted him and said, what did you do? Remember, what does Adam respond? Ha'isha Asher Asat, she did it. Now, by the way, I know this is going to make me terribly unpopular. The chait of the eight das tovara is unequivocally and absolutely the fault of Chava. I said it. Right? It's the fault of Chava. Of course it's the fault of Chava. Chava was the one. I'm sorry. Actually, that was Mayer's line. He asked me to say that, so I'm saying it. Right? So it was absolutely the chait of Chava. She was the one who was enticed by the snake. She was the one who went ahead and told Adam to eat. It's absolutely her mistake. It is her mistake. Adam and Rishon did not intentionally eat from that eight. And the same way that I don't come home and ask my wife about the kashrus in the home, because I trust anything and everything she does. Adam doesn't have to ask about the kashrus of the apple either. So the chait is Chava's fault. See, if it's Chava's fault, so why is Adam held accountable? Because in that moment, what Adam should have done is he should have said, there's not a you and a me. There's an us. So Chava, you messed up big time. But you know what? Your mistake is not just your mistake. Your mistake is our mistake. But instead, what Adam does is, he says, ooh, Chava, you are in big trouble now. You better work that out. I'll be here. I'll wait for you, honey. Don't worry about it. Just square that away with God. And when you're able to take that, I'll be here and I love you. I'm certainly going to wait for you. That's not the way marriage works. And this is an incredibly important yesod. Because sometimes when couples encounter challenges, what often is said is the following. Because sometimes when a couple has a challenge, it's one of the spouses who has the primary challenge, right? It's one of the spouses, ultimately, again, who really has the primary challenge. And so sometimes the other spouse will call them the challengeless spouse, says to the challenge-filled spouse, get it worked out. It's your problem. get it worked out. I'm here. I'll wait around, but this is your problem. You need to deal with it. When you're in a committed relationship, there's no such thing as my problems and your problems. In a committed relationship, there's only one set of problems, and that is our problems. Because the moment that there's his and hers, you can have his and hers towels, you can even have his and hers bathrooms if you want, but you can't have his and hers problems. There's one set of marital challenges. You know, there's an amazing Medrash. Medrash writes that when Cain killed Hevel, Hevel's lifeless body was in front of Adam and Chava, and they didn't know what to do with it. Because remember, again, Hevel was the first person who died. They didn't know what to do. So the Medrash writes, they saw the raven had lost a child, and the raven was clawing with its feet some dirt, put the body of its child in the earth, and covered it up. And Adam says, hey, you know what? That makes sense. We'll bury Hevel in the ground as well. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, what does this mean? What does this mean? They didn't know what to do. The Baal Shem Tov says something absolutely beautiful. When a couple is not together, they don't understand how to problem solve together. That metaphor, the metaphor of the Medrash, is that Adam and Chava faced a challenge. But because they approached things with his problems and her problems, they were unable to come together to problem solve. Such an important case. So sometimes we get exceptionally upset at our spouse for their deficiencies. We get exceptionally upset at our spouse for their challenges. And we get exceptionally upset at our spouse for their mistakes. And we're tempted to say, now you go and work that out. I just want to tell you, I've seen that story unfold enough time that when couples do not own their challenges together, they don't stay together. Sometimes it's painful to own someone else's challenge. And it's painful to own someone else's problem, especially when I didn't do it. I didn't create this situation. It was brought upon me. But unless, of course, a couple chooses to face their challenges together, they won't be able to build a marriage together either. So these are the five lessons that I hope to leave you with tonight. Lesson number one, again, just a quick chazara. Lesson number one, learn to appreciate, respect, and bolster the strengths of the other. Lesson number two, learn to bend down and meet people where they are. Lesson number three, keep the passion alive through mindfulness and through, again, attention to our physical relationships. Lesson number four, keep the kedusha alive. Lesson number five, meet your marital challenges together. So we should be zocha. And Mi'at Hashem, you know, building a happy and successful marriage is not easy. Not easy at all. And in our generation, we are bombarded with newfound influences and newfound challenges that perhaps did not exist in previous generations. But if we're born in this generation with all the challenges, it means we're also born with kochos, with the strength to meet those challenges. So in the zchus of coming out tonight, for an evening like this, when everybody has a whole bunch of other places they need to be, in the source of coming out for a night like this with one singular purpose, which is to build and to bolster our relationships, we should find the courage and find the strength to roll up our sleeves, do the heavy lifting, do what needs to be done, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless us as individuals, bless us as couples, bless us as families with incredible siyata d'shmaya. May our homes become bastions of shalom, of tara, of kiddusha, and may ultimately our marriages, our families, and our homes be a source of nachas for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amen. Amen.